Walk the flight line at any major summer fly-in and you'll see them, row after row of low-wing RVs canopies open to the heat. Logbooks set out for judges who are really just fellow builders, who earn the right to judge by spending 5 years in their own garages, earning the same right. The RV line from Vans Aircraft is the most successful home-built design in aviation history, and about 18 months ago, the company that makes those kits was in bankruptcy court. I'm Tower and this is ATs on Radio Hangar today. On your midday headlines, we're tracking the Vans Aircraft story from the Chapter 11 filing to where the company stands now, what it means for builders with kits in progress. Plus, the Federal Aviation Administration's summer safety push and where pilot training numbers sit heading into the second half of 2026. Stay with me. Today's program is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the company that shaped more home-built logbooks than anyone else in aviation. Richard van Grinsven started building airplanes in the early 1970s in Oregon. His first design was a modified Stitz Playboy. When the plans he needed weren't available through the commercial market, he drew them himself. That instinct to figure it out yourself when the off-the-shelf answer doesn't exist became the DNA of everything the company built after that. Vans Aircraft, headquartered in Aurora, Oregon, became the dominant force in experimental kit aviation over 5 decades. The numbers are worth sitting with for a moment. As of the most recent Experimental Aircraft Association, or EAA, census data, more than 11,000 RV aircraft have been completed and registered. The RV-7 and RV-9 are consistently listed as the most popular home-built designs in the United States. The RV-12 opened the line to light sport. The RV-14 gave serious cross-country pilots a serious airplane capable of cruising well over 200 miles per hour and landing on turf without complaint. Vans wasn't just manufacturing kits, it was manufacturing a culture. So when the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in November of 2023, the reaction across the experimental aviation community was somewhere between disbelief and grief. The EAA forums, which are normally full of debate about nutplate torque values and primer choices, went quiet for about 48 hours and then erupted. Here's what led to the filing. During the pandemic years, Vans saw a surge in kit orders that was genuinely extraordinary. People working from home had time they hadn't had before. Some had savings growing because travel had stopped. A meaningful number of them decided it was time to start the build project they'd been putting off for years. Vans took those orders, collected deposits, and tried to ramp production to meet the demand. Two things went wrong at roughly the same time. First, material costs increased significantly with inflation, metal, hardware, composites. All of it got more expensive in ways that eroded the margin Vans had built into their kit pricing. Second, and more damaging, was a manufacturing quality issue with laser-cut parts. Vans had transitioned some production to laser-cutting for efficiency. What they discovered after those parts were in customers' hands was that some laser-cut components were developing hairline cracks, particularly around lightning holes when flexed during assembly or flight. The issue wasn't universal across every part, but it was significant enough that the company issued a service bulletin and began a replacement program for affected components. That replacement program cost money Vans didn't have in reserve, on top of the inflation-driven cost increases, on top of a fulfillment backlog they were already struggling to clear. By the time the Chapter 11 petition landed in federal court, Vans had outstanding deposits from hundreds of kit buyers, some of whom had paid in full for kits they had not received. In a bankruptcy proceeding, those customers were unsecured creditors. In a liquidation scenario that is the back of the line, the EAA engaged immediately and publicly. The association worked to ensure kit buyers understood their rights, connected members with legal resources, and made the case that keeping Vans operational mattered not just for buyers waiting on kits, but for the tens of thousands of RV aircraft already flying that depend on manufacturer support for parts and documentation. The reorganization plan was not painless. Some deposit holders received reduced settlements. Fulfillment timelines stretched beyond what anyone wanted. But the outcome that mattered was this. Vans Aircraft survived. The company emerged from Chapter 11 as a going concern. Production restarted and customer support remained operational. Now here's the practical picture if any of this affects you directly. If you're flying an RV aircraft right now, nothing about the bankruptcy changes your airworthiness situation. Experimental amateur-built aircraft operate under Federal Aviation Regulation Part 91. The experimental certificate is tied to the aircraft's build logbook and the current owner's maintenance program. The original manufacturer is not required to remain in business for the airplane to stay legal to fly. Your airworthiness depends on your condition inspection and your maintenance records, not on Vans' corporate status. If you're mid-build and waiting on components, contact Vans' customer support directly. It is slower than it was in the boom years, but it is functional. The company is fulfilling orders and shipping parts. If you're considering a new build and thinking about the RV line, the company is still accepting orders. Do your homework first. Talk to current builders, check the EAA forums, ask questions before you write the deposit check, and that brings me to the larger lesson, one that applies well beyond Vans aircraft. The experimental aircraft category exists because Congress and the FAA agreed that allowing people to build and fly aircraft outside the normal type certification system produces a public benefit. The trade-off for that freedom is that the regulatory protections governing a Cessna or a Piper do not apply in the same way to a kit manufacturer. There is no escrow requirement for builder deposits. There is no government-backed warranty program. There is no secondary certification oversight holding the manufacturer to a production standard. The EAA has long argued that the community itself, through programs like the EAA Technical Counselor Network and peer review of builds, provides a form of oversight that produces safe aircraft, and the accident data largely supports that argument. But the Vans Chapter 11 was a reminder that community trust is not a substitute for financial due diligence. If you are about to write a five-figure check to a kit manufacturer, know who you're writing it to, understand what happens to your deposit if the company doesn't deliver. The company that launched more home-built aircraft than anyone else in history came very close to disappearing. It didn't. But the home-built community learned something from the experience that it needed to learn. Now let's move to the second story on your midday. The FAA's summer flying season safety campaign is in full effect, and the data behind it is worth understanding, not just the messaging. July and August are historically the two deadliest months in general aviation by accident count. Part of that is exposure. There are simply more flights during summer than any other period, but the accident per flight hour rate also climbs in summer months, which tells you it is not just volume driving the numbers. The conditions are more demanding, and some pilots are not meeting them. Three specific patterns show up repeatedly in National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, investigations of summer accidents, convective weather. Summer afternoon thunderstorms develop faster than most pilots expect and can block entire corridors between morning and midday. The mistake the NTSB finds most often is not a pilot who flew into a storm. It is a pilot who departed into conditions they did not adequately assess, or who continued when the weather they planned around moved faster than forecast. The Graphical Forecast for Aviation, or GFA, which replaced the old area forecast in 2017, gives pilots more visual tools for thinking about convective threats than the old text-based products ever did. If you have not spent time on the Aviation Weather Center website learning to read the GFA, that is a worthwhile afternoon this week. Density, altitude. This one gets pilots at high elevation airports every summer, but it also gets pilots at sea level airports on 95 degree days who do not run the performance numbers because they have flown that runway 100 times and think they know what it feels like. Performance charts do not care what you're used to. They care about temperature, pressure altitude, and weight. The accident record includes runway overruns from aircraft that had room to spare on a standard day and no room at all on a summer afternoon. Go around decision making. Summer turbulence, afternoon crosswinds, and thermal activity that makes approaches feel different from the morning all contribute to approach instability. The FAA's message on this is consistent. If you're not stabilized by 500 feet, go around. The accident reports for the pilots who did not are not ambiguous about what came next. If you have not completed a wings phase credit in a while, the FAA safety team has online courses running through the end of August. They qualify for wings credit, they are free, and they are available at faesafety.gov. The courses are actually worth the time. Third story this afternoon. The FAA's 2025 Civil Airman statistics are out, and they present an interesting picture for anyone thinking about the future of the pilot population. Student pilot certificates issued last year increased for the fourth consecutive year. That is genuinely good news. More people are entering the pipeline than at any point in recent memory. The cautionary note is completion rates, somewhere between 15 and 25% of student pilots who solo go on to earn a private pilot certificate. The rest stop somewhere in the process. That rate has not improved at the same pace as the entry numbers, which means the pipeline is wider at the front than it is at the finish line. The reasons are well documented. Cost is at the top of the list. The average private pilot certificate now runs between $12,000 and $18,000 at most certificated flight schools, and that range can climb higher depending on location, aircraft type, and how frequently the student is flying. For most people, that is a significant commitment, and any disruption, a job change, a move, a difficult stretch at work can end training before the certificate is in hand. Chief flight instructors at large training organizations point to something beyond cost. Training frequency matters enormously to completion. Students who fly three or more times per week finish at substantially higher rates than students flying once every 2 weeks. The skill and knowledge decay between infrequent lessons is real. When students spend lesson time relearning material from the previous flight instead of building on it, both cost and timeline extend, and motivation tends to exit with them. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, or AOPA, and the EAA have both flagged this as a structural challenge for the future of general aviation. If the pilot population is going to sustain itself, the training pipeline needs to become more efficient at moving people from first lesson to certificate, not just at attracting them to the first lesson. Some Part 141 schools are experimenting with structured completion programs that fix cost, timeline, and instructor assignment to give students a clearer path to the finish line. Early data from these programs shows higher completion rates. It is a small data set, but it is moving in the right direction. The front door of aviation is open, wider than it has been in 20 years. The work now is figuring out how to keep people moving through the building instead of turning around at the first obstacle. One more item before I let you go. If you're operating on an electronic flight bag and have not updated your application software in the last several months, take a few minutes this week to verify your notice to air missions data is current and complete. The FAA completed the formal retirement of its legacy notice to air missions system in 2025 and consolidated to the new National Airspace Data Repository. Most electronic flight bag applications updated their data feeds ahead of that transition, but some older devices running older software versions may be receiving incomplete data without flagging it as such. The practical concern is instrument flight. If your data feed is missing entries from the new system, you may be looking at an approach briefing or obstacle summary that appears complete but has gaps. The FAA issued a special Airworthiness Information Bulletin, or SAIB, in June addressing this specifically. Check your app version. Verify the developer's release notes, confirm compatibility with the current FAA system, and if your device no longer supports the current application version, factor that into your operation until you can update the hardware. It is not a widespread problem, but it is the kind of problem that is easy to miss because everything looks normal until you need the piece that is not there. Sources today include the EAA's coverage of the VANS aircraft bankruptcy proceedings, AOPA reporting on the training pipeline data, the FAA 2025 Civil Airmen statistics, and FAA safety team materials for the summer campaign. The VANS Aircraft Service Bulletin addressing laser-cut part concerns is available directly on their website. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Stay current. Stay proficient. See you next time.